Chapter 6. Ask and you shall receive. The gentle power to get what you want. When you want to persuade someone about a thing or an idea, you have to get into a special presentation mode and take on professional posture and language in order to be effective. Isn't that so? Absolutely not. Nothing could be further from the truth. It's because of this kind of thinking, conscious or subconscious, that so many people dislike the idea of being sold. And it's because of this kind of thinking that so many people fail to get what they want in life. Selling is not supposed to be a contrivance or some special concoction or any other artificially induced setup designed to manipulate people into decisions or actions. No. Instead, it is normal human interaction wherein, for example, person A exposes person B to an idea or a course of action. Then they communicate back and forth about the logic, the merits, and the reasons why person B should believe or do as person A suggests. If person B is persuaded, it will be due to a number of factors. Person A is credible, the idea makes sense, it brings personal benefits, and person B wants it or wants to do it. When you get this reasoning in your head, it will make you much more persuasive. It will allow you to relax and to avoid being stodgy in your presentation of ideas. It will increase your effectiveness because your customer or client will be able to relate to you better. Imagine a man I know, Steve. He generally gets what he wants and he's not overbearing or aggressive. Sometimes others say to him, "You could sell ice to an Eskimo," simply because his way of presenting his ideas is so easy, but compelling and persuasive. The people in his life are very cooperative with him, and actually they like him. That is a close description of the masters in the selling game. Do you get it? Too many salespeople forget about their clients or their customers, that they are human. So they present themselves inhumanly to a company, to a department, or even to the title of a position. And then, after that artificial exertion, they immediately go back to being themselves and to live as normal again. What about you? When you find yourself selling your wares, are you more like Steve, or are you more like the average salesperson? Steve is a good person and a master persuader, but do you think he was born with the skill of smoothness? No, he learned how to present himself. Steve and I worked together at the same job when I lived in Cincinnati. When he was a sales trainer in his 20s, he learned how to use the 5 steps of persuasive presentation power that we discussed in the previous chapter. He internalized the process, and he has used it consciously and unconsciously, not only in his business, but also in his interpersonal life. He is one of the best communicators I know. This skill has brought him millions of dollars, happy, fulfilled personal relationships, and a spectacular lifestyle. It is possible for you to learn this process as well. You can achieve outstanding results in the greatest business in the world. The highly accomplished salespeople, the masters, they figure out a way to sell that feels natural to normal human beings with their basic needs and goals, desires, fears, dreams, and suspicions. They buy when somebody helps them allay their fears. They reduce their suspicions when they believe in what is being presented, and it helps to generate a deep desire for what is offered. Steve does this very well, not just because he is smart or logical and that he has good mastery of his language. He is a master persuader because he is gracious, flexible, and he's responsive to what other people want. There are 2 major implications in this example. First, this book will be worth its weight in diamonds if you get one simple skill from it, how to stop presenting your products and services. But instead to present what's in it for me in a way that is natural, conversational, and human. Isn't that a curious thing to say? To stop presenting your services and your wares, but to present what's in it for me. That alone will make you money in your professional endeavors. But the second implication is more exciting and is much more fun. This second implication is how to use the steps of persuasive presentation power in your day-to-day non-professional activities. Use it to get what you want from other people. The earlier caution bears repeating. This application is so powerful that it will give you great influence and you should therefore use it responsibly. So here goes, how to get what you want from others. The great irony is that the people who profess to hate sales all spend their entire lives asking others for favors, recommending actions, suggesting alternatives, convincing others of their viewpoint, and seeking help or contribution from others. Let's face it, human beings continually want things from each other. This is true for even the loneliest and most isolated of souls. We don't always have what we want from others, so we feel it is necessary to persuade others to believe, to think, and to do what we want in order for us to have what we want. Parents want obedience and respect. Lovers desire sexual favors and other forms of affection from each other. The hungry want food. The lonely want companionship. Those who fail want understanding and a second chance. The guilty want forgiveness. And let's face it, everybody wants recognition and a sense of esteem. The list is too long to cover, but we always want something that we spend our lives trying to get. The problem is that the something we want is not just lying around on the ground. Other people have it, and we must persuade them to want to release it to us. So again, we spend our lives asking. In fact, the most successful of us ask for a multitude of things, and we get a great deal of what we ask for. That's one measure of success, at least the material measure. Actually, if you do not ask, that is the surest way to guarantee that you will not have. I live by that axiom, ask and you shall receive. My wife Grace will tell you that I ask for a lot. I often make the most unlikely requests of people, and surprisingly, I get what I want most of the time. In this section, let's talk about how to get your desires granted even when they are very unusual or unlikely. Here's the scenario. I visit a shoe store at Eastgate Mall in Cincinnati, Ohio. The shoes range in price from $29 to $150. I buy a pair of shoes for $150, top of the line, right? Well, in 2 months, I find that the heels of the shoes have already worn down almost to the leather. I think to myself, but that's not right. I could have bought a pair of shoes for $29 to get this kind of service. So I decided to take the shoes back to the store and get a refund. Now, wait a minute. Nobody takes shoes back to a store after wearing them down. It's just not done. But I think I'll just ask. Can't hurt, right? As I approach the store in Eastgate Mall, my wife, Grace, takes a detour and goes the opposite direction in that mall. She decides, I don't want to see this, as she's often had to do with me. Who ever heard of such a thing? It's not like he bought the wrong color and the shoes were still new in the box. Asking for a refund on a used pair of shoes, this could be embarrassing. Grace knows me to be crazy in asking the impossible, and so she wisely chooses to distance herself from my antics. With childlike innocence, I approach the only person in the store, and the conversation begins. This is me. Hi there. Good evening. How are you doing? The attendant says. Fine, thank you. How may I help you? I have a huge favor to ask, and I really need your help. By the way, my name's Alvin. What's your name?
Oh, I'm Betty.
What seems to be the problem, sir?
Oh, no problem at all. I just need your help with a pair of shoes that I bought 2 months ago. It's your top-of-the-line Brand X, and I named the brand. Would you believe that in that shorter time the heels wore down to this? Then I show the shoes. And it's not like I abused them. Now I know it's very unusual for you to even consider taking back shoes after they've been worn, but in this case, maybe you'd be kind enough to help me. Something seems to be wrong with this pair. I have to believe it was defective in order for it to wear down so fast.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. I know how you feel, but there's nothing I can do. We simply cannot accept shoes back after they've been worn down.
Betty, I understand. I hear you. That has to be your normal policy, of course. And by the way, if you tell me to shut up and get out of the store, I'll hold my head down and I'll simply do that without complaining. Because I know that you're right. You have the power to dismiss me right away. But I guess I'm just asking for an exception to the normal rule, considering the situation. I mean, think of yourself as a shopper who bought the most expensive dress on the rack. After wearing it a few times, it starts to wear out. Wouldn't you think something's wrong with the dress and try to return it to the store?
I understand how you're feeling, sir, but there's nothing I can do. We simply cannot accept shoes back after they've been worn down.
Okay, I tell you what. I don't want to get you in any trouble, Betty, because I know your supervisor may be upset at you. It sounds like you don't have the authorization to do what I'm asking, and if you tried, you'd have a lot of explaining to do to your boss. So do me a favor. Who's your supervisor, and how can I talk with him or her?
She replies,
My supervisor's Angie, but she's not here tonight. She's working in the Tri-County store. Besides, it won't do any good, sir. She'll tell you exactly the same thing that I'm telling you.
So I say,
I understand. But of course, it won't do any harm to try, would it? Wouldn't you agree with that?
She says, Sir, I'm telling you, it's useless. She will not take them back.
By this time, Betty was getting flustered. She was getting a little impatient. But I was calm, and I was smiling. Betty, I'll make you a deal. Call Angie on the phone, and let her talk to me. She will probably say no, just like you expect her to. And if she does, I make you a promise that I will be out of here, gone, and I won't even be upset. Promise. Betty dials the phone slowly and grudgingly. So she gets her boss on the phone and she says, Hi, Angie, this is Betty. I have a gentleman here who bought a pair of shoes and wore them down. He's back now and he's asking. At this time, I tap Betty on the shoulder and ask her politely to let me talk directly with Angie.
Hold on. He wants to talk to you.
I get on the phone. Hello, Angie. Thank you so much for taking my call. My name is Alvin Day, and I've been working with Betty on a special situation here, but I don't want to get her in any trouble because I don't believe that she has the authority to do what I'm asking. I'm glad I have the chance to talk with you because I know that you have the authority to do what I'm asking to do, if it makes sense to you. And so Angie replies, What seems to be the problem, Mr. Day? And so I explain the situation with the shoes, and I continue. And by the way, Angie, I realize how unusual the request may sound, and I know I'm asking for an exception to the normal rule. So if you told me to shut up and go away, I'd hold my head down and I'd do exactly that. You have the power to shut me down and I won't even be too upset because I know that in this situation, all I have to depend on is your kindness. She responds, Mr. Day, when exactly did you buy the shoes and how often have you worn them? I respond, It's been 2 months and 2 days exactly. And I've only worn them to work and back each week. By the way, Angie, I really appreciate your willingness even to listen to this. Some supervisors wouldn't have given me the time of day to express myself. So thank you very much. You're so kind.
Not a problem, Mr. Day, she responds.
Now, our policy is that once the shoes are worn, they cannot be returned. But I tell you what. Is Betty standing there still? Let me talk to her.
Yes, I thought to myself.
So I give the phone to Betty. She listens for a while, and then her expression changes. She is visibly upset. Half a minute later, she hangs up the phone and asks me for my receipt in the kind of voice and feeling you might expect of someone who is very constipated. She rummages through the cash register. She literally tosses cash onto the counter toward me and then turns away to arrange the shoes on a nearby rack. I collect my cash and my receipt. I express my heartfelt thanks to her. But she does not respond. I leave the store with a grateful smile, wondering, now where in the world do I find grace? Embedded in the circumstances and dialogue of this true story is an array of powerful people-influencing devices that you can use to persuade others to do exactly what you believe is right or simply what you want them to do. So let's talk about the principles you can apply beyond the particular situation of a $150 pair of shoes at the Eastgate Mall. First, the balancing act. The first important comment is this. When you enter a situation where you're asking for the impossible, it is essential to believe 100% that it's not only possible, but that you definitely will get what you want. That belief affects your language and your demeanor, and it can give you quiet, childlike confidence. Okay, that's all good and well. Sure, believing is critical. But here's a potential problem based on how the human heart and soul operate. When you enter into an endeavor believing deeply that it will definitely turn out the way you expect, if it does not, then you run the risk of huge disappointment and energy loss. The formula works this way. Extremely high expectations plus disappointment equals low energy level, which equals lowered expectations. Therefore, after you try your best and you get shut down, the danger is that next time you have a chance to ask for great and wonderful outcomes, you recall the pain and the embarrassment of the previous disappointment and you back off. You back off in terms of the magnitude of the things for which you ask, or you back off in terms of the amount of belief and confidence that you show as you ask. This, in turn, limits your persuasiveness and kills your chances of success. So here is the tricky balance. After being disappointed, I say to myself, hey, I was asking for the impossible anyway. Not everybody could say yes to that. Next time I ask, I'm going to find the person who can and wants to say yes. If I feel disappointed, it's only for a brief moment, and then I move on with renewed energy, ready to ask for the next big thing. Listen to what Natalie Cole has to say in her song, Crazy She Calls Me. Quote, "The difficult I'll do right now. The impossible will take a little while." Unquote. This is persuasion power at work. When you ask for the grand and spectacular, believe 100% that what you ask will be received. If you fail on that specific occasion, rationalize your way out of the deep disappointment and avoid the energy loss, and then psych yourself up to be ripe and ready for the next opportunity. That way you continue to move ahead in your life, never looking back, never looking down. Here's another consideration from this example. The strategies of gentle persuasion power. Notice the strategies embedded in the dialogue above, the one we just covered. They can have some very remarkable effects, including releasing your rights, 1, 2, switching targets, 3, the all or nothing offer, and furthermore, 4, inject gratefulness, 5, do your own talking. These are 5 powerful strategies which we will now take one by one to help you get equipped for persuasion with smoothness and compelling effectiveness. 1. Release your rights. In the above example about the shoes, you will notice that the language I used did not give any indication of any entitlements or personal rights on my part. Not only did I not have a basis for insisting on any rights, but even if I did, to do so would immediately have produced a feeling of antagonism and would have alienated Betty and would have alienated Angie. You see, you do not persuade based on rights or on facts. You do so based on feelings, how the other person feels about what you're asking. Also, I assumed the position of humble dejection. I transported the other person to the place where she was exercising her rights and her authority to banish me from the store, to dismiss me, to shame me for asking for something so unlikely. And then I agreed to go away quietly if she used that authority, go away without contention, without resistance, because she's only exercising her rights. This has a powerful psychological effect. It weakens the other person's defenses and it opens the person to think about other alternatives instead of simply saying no. Imagine that I do something very stupid to you, and I admit it, and then I give you a piece of stick, I bend over, and I tell you to beat me hard because I deserve it. Would you immediately flagellate me within an inch of my life till my skin peels off? Or would you think about it and consider not doing it? After all, how much joy or fulfillment
does one get from punishing the penitent? The answer is, not much. Making myself vulnerable in this case did not weaken me. It gave me power, the power to remove the satisfaction that the other person would feel from denying me. Strategy number two, switch targets. I tried as much as I could with Betty until I determined that she was just not putting me off for the sake of putting me off. I came to realize that it was beyond her authority to do what I was asking, and I knew that I needed to change my target to someone with the authority to do what I was needing to be done. Making that call is very critical. You have to watch and you have to listen carefully to know when to give in and to change your focus. But there was still a problem. How could I get past Betty's belief that what I was asking was impossible and that it did not deserve exposure to her supervisor? This was where I negotiated to move forward by giving Betty a chance to prove that what she was telling me was true. If her boss turned me down, I would leave. Now, once I succeeded in getting Angie on the phone, notice that I repeated all the same techniques. I used the same message, but I used it on a different target. Angie was new to the discussion. She had no idea of what I was saying to Betty. The message was fine. All I needed to do was to switch targets. When you determine that your original point of focus is not worthwhile, then negotiate around it and find a new, more suitable target on which to focus. As long as the yes that you seek is worth the effort, keep going until you find somebody willing to listen to you receptively. Number three, the all or nothing offer, and furthermore. Betty was persuaded. I had offered to leave the store calmly if her boss should deny me. In her mind, the outcome was clear. The supervisor would repeat exactly what Betty had told me. After all, it was the store's policy. And finally, she would get rid of me permanently. Please be sure to notice that the story is not really about me. It's about you. There can come a point in your negotiation when you know that the odds are against you and that you have nothing left to lose. You're extremely unlikely to get what you want. In that situation, most normal people would give up and would admit defeat honorably and leave. And there's nothing wrong with that unless you have this strategy. As you pursue mastery in the game and you find yourself in that kind of situation, you learn to go for all or nothing. The game has come completely against you now. Now you stage one last dramatic moment when you are prepared to give it everything that you have and walk away if it does not work. Give it everything you have? Huh, that's a joke. What do you have? You see, this is a great strategic move because at such a point, you really have nothing. If you fail, you have no worse off situation than you had before. And if you succeed, you win it all. Having lost it all with Betty, I made one last bold offer. I got access to Angie, and I regained what I had lost with Betty. Now, how could you use this tactic? After your best efforts, you find that your buyer refuses completely to purchase your new shampoo products, for example. He says it will not sell in his stores, and so you respond, "Okay, I understand how you feel. I'm going to put my neck on the line here. Here's the minimal order quantity. If you just sign this form, and if 75% or more of the products have not sold through in the first week of the promotion, I will personally go to all of your store, I'll pick up the products, and I will give you full credit. Furthermore, I'll come to your house the next Saturday, and I'll wash your car myself. Here's the order form." Let me give you another example. Your good friend refuses to go with you to the event that's being held in Los Angeles. The response is, "It's too far away, it's too expensive, it's not worth the time." After all your persuasion and your best efforts, your friend thinks that you're crazy and he's not going to budge. And so you respond, "Okay, I hear you. I'm going to put myself at risk here. The total cost for the two-day excursion to Los Angeles, it'll work out to be about $320 as I calculate it. I will give you back every penny if after the event you tell me seriously that the experience was not worth more than the $320 that you pay. Furthermore, I will give you one day of free work.
You can drive me like a slave to do anything for you that is in my power and is legal. I will work like a horse. Notice that in each case, you not only make the bold offer, but you follow up with a furthermore. Furthermore, I'll not even get upset if your boss says no. Furthermore, I'll wash your car next Saturday. Furthermore, I'll work for you like a slave for a whole day. The furthermore increases your chances of getting yes. It is the icing that tempts the buyer to take a bite of the cake. While the primary offer is often a business proposal, the furthermore can be lighthearted, it can be funny, or it can be a diversion. The buyer may still consider the primary offer and make it a strictly business decision and thereby be able to say no. But the furthermore adds the dimension of humor, lightheartedness, of relief, and it makes it easier for the buyer to say, okay, fine, let's try it. The fourth strategy, inject gratefulness. At a certain point, I began to feel like Angie, well, she could dismiss me due just to the fact that she was getting weary of my case. I'd already talked to Betty, and now I was trying to wear her down with the same thing. And at that right moment, when I perceived that it was necessary, I injected gratefulness. I complimented her on her kindness and her patience in just listening to me. This is an important strategy, especially in longer conversations. When I'm booking an important flight, for example, and I have difficulty finding the arrangement that I want, this injection of gratefulness gives the attendant fuel to work with me for another several minutes until I find what I want. Note that the show of gratefulness only works well if you feel it deeply and you express it sincerely. The other person believes you and stays to help you a little more. And finally, strategy number 5, do your own talking. As you observed from the discussion that we had between the attendants and me in the store, you should never let a go-between do the talking for you. Do your own talking. If Betty had been the one to represent my case to Angie, I would certainly have walked away without the refund. Can you see that? It's easy to say no to someone who is nameless and faceless. It was harder for me to get a no when I was the one in her earpiece, and I was being nice, and I was being humane. I couldn't have counted on Betty to do that. Furthermore, Betty would have communicated her own biases, and she would have tainted Angie's response with her tone of voice and exactly the words that she'd use. Insist as nicely as you can that you speak directly with the person who makes the decision that you seek, and then present your case. Oh, one additional thought. In the kind of scenario where you ask for the unusual, make sure that the other person knows your name. Also, find out the other person's name. You would be amazed at how often a buyer is persuaded to say yes just by hearing his name used kindly. Few things are more motivating to someone than hearing his or her name used with kindness and respect. Variations of this approach have repeatedly worked wonders for me, and I know it can do so for you too. When you learn and refine this gracious way of persuasion, you can make remarkable things happen, and you will benefit in ways that astound other people. I used to travel with a business partner living in Toronto. She was frequently amazed at how often and how easily I used to get treated like I owned the place. I am testament to the fact that if you become adept at this approach, you can routinely benefit from free upgrades to suites in hotels and rental car upgrades and access to executive club rooms, all undeserved, all by asking with the techniques of gentle persuasion power. You can have credit card companies refund late payment penalties due to your own fault. You can have institutions extend deadlines and waive requirements. You can have retailers give you substantial discounts that are not available to the general public. In order for you to get a continued clear picture of how this can work for you, let me give you one more example. This is an example of a huge multi-billion-dollar multinational corporation that spun around on its heels and made things happen in a way that I'd never seen done before. This was the mighty IBM Corporation. In 2 days, I was supposed to leave on a trip to Barcelona and to Rotterdam, and my IBM laptop simply stopped working. Now, the idea of flying across the Atlantic for 9 hours, one way and then the other way, and my laptop not working was completely unbearable. Furthermore, I had to have it because I needed to present my information to my clients. My admin assistant tried to get IBM to respond quickly. She quickly came to the conclusion, based upon the facts, that this was impossible because she only had 2 days and pretty soon 1.5 days, and IBM could not do it. The part I needed even had to be flown in from Japan because they had no more left in the US. At least that's what she was told. It was clearly hopeless. So I picked up the phone, and I began to use exactly the techniques that I outlined in the example above regarding the shoes. Every time I came to a wall where I identified that I was talking to the wrong person, I changed my targets. I negotiated forward. In the process, I spoke to about 8 people. Within a day, the part had been shipped to my office by overnight delivery. A local IBM technician called me, got directions to my office, came to my office and did the installation himself and tested to make sure that my laptop was working. IBM had even sent an extra pair of parts just in case the first pair did not work as prescribed to make sure that on my trip, I had what I wanted. Furthermore, an IBM supervisor called back and apologized for the inconvenience and checked just to make sure that the installation was done completely to my satisfaction. The supervisor wished me a safe flight. Of course, I got his phone number just in case I needed it for anything in the future to talk with somebody so powerful and so cooperative. When I departed from the Miami airport with my laptop next to me, fully functional, I had the same little smile on my face that I had that night when I left the shoe store with my money in hand, looking for grace. So, why does this work? Please do not misunderstand my attitude here. I am definitely not a master or anything powerful here. My greatest claim to fame in this arena is that I have been shot down, I have been embarrassed, I have been denied, and I have been told no more than anyone I know. After years of wondering if there's not a better way, I started to pay attention. It was then that I discovered the remarkable secret behind it all. All yes and no decisions are made by human beings. Even computerized responses are programmed by humans. And all human beings have a transcendent need to feel a sense of respect and recognition. That's the secret. This is not manipulation or psychological control. Rather, it is a willingness to put yourself in a position of vulnerability and even subservience to the rights and the authority of other people. To admit that you have no power at all to make people believe or do anything. That people have the right to disappoint you and to deny you if they so choose. When you acknowledge and verbalize that power, the power that you vest in others to say no to you, they cannot help but feel better about themselves and feel unwilling, therefore, to exercise that power and bring you hurt or disappointment. That is to say, unless they are among the most hardened and uncaring of people. The other possibility is that they operate in a legalistic world where they fear being struck by lightning if ever they should bend the rules or do something unusual. When speaking to Betty and Angie, I deeply believed what I was saying to them. I had no right to demand what I was asking. I was prepared to walk away and accept defeat if it should come my way. But I was very sure that they would not hurt me because I was being kind and I offered no resistance. If Betty got upset, it was for a different reason. She was living within the confines of a box with solid walls of do's and don'ts, and I was acting as if those walls didn't exist. At least, that's what I'd like to think. I must concede that she really may not have had the authorization to do what I asked, and doing so would have gotten her into some serious trouble. In any case, when I saw the walls within which she was operating, I simply shifted my target away from her. Now that you know the secret, use it well. It gives you great power that could be a source of manipulation, of control, of seduction, of deceit, if you use it improperly without integrity and goodness of heart.
Please proceed with a kind heart and really care about the people with whom you deal. Then you never have to worry about using this power negatively. Then your successes can be enjoyed with childlike innocence. And remember, the power of the gentle rushing stream carves out room to flow even through the mighty rock. You don't have to be overpowering and formidable in order to be highly effective and persuasive. The term persuasion power may seem rather aggressive at first, but here is evidence that its power lies in its softness. You can lead a charmed life where people desire to say yes to you repeatedly and to give you your desires. What a way to live. And now in conclusion, the bottom line. Persuasion power can do wonders for you in your regular interpersonal communications. If you want to acquire and achieve great things in your life, you must ask for great things. Ask for the spectacular, for the grand, even for the impossible. Believe you will have it and apply the approach of gentle persuasion power. 1. Release your rights. Don't be disagreeable or demanding. Take the humble position that robs satisfaction from those with the power to deny you. 2. Switch targets. When you find a wall, negotiate around it. Find someone with authority and the willingness to respond positively. 3. Make a bold offer, and furthermore, when everything you've tried fails to work and you have nothing to lose, put it all on the line and go for gusto. 4. Inject gratefulness. Be sincerely thankful before you get what you want. It gives encouragement to those trying to help you. And 5. Do your own talking. Never accept an unpaid lawyer acting as middleman to make your case. Do it yourself. The foundation of this approach is the gentle pressure of the cool, consistent stream that wears a hole through the mighty rock. Use this approach and people will want to say yes to you. Ask, and you shall receive.